back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I am back on the homestead. At some point, I'll freshen up the vine for the view here from the condo and get some new logo action going. But I am back from Los Angeles. It was a, I don't want to say a wild week in Los Angeles. It was kind of like the exact opposite. You know, home team wins the Super Bowl in their home stadium, in their home place. Nobody was greasing poles. They did have to break up a little bit of, you know, people jumping on cars and setting bonfires in downtown LA, about five blocks from where I was apparently having sushi after the game. Luke Jones joins us now. He abstained from all things California last week. And I'm just going to say this. And I we had another friend of ours here who didn't go to a Super Bowl. And, you know, I ribbed him for years, but I don't want to say you missed the time of your life, but it was a good time. And, yeah. Right on down to the Black Crows opening up and Wyclef Jean on a game day, and the game was great. The game ended great. And, we could sit here and talk about the game or the season or the Bengals or the future, but as Super Bowls go, and I've been to 28 of them, it was a good Super Bowl. I had a good time. It was fun. Weather, hot. And I guess the takeaway for me and the part that you missed out on, dude, that stadium. Oh my God. I mean, it's opulent, it's crazy, but it's not like any other place. And you totally feel like you're in California when you're there, if you've spent any time in California.
Well, I mean, this is why the NFL wanted to get back in Los Angeles for a quarter century, and why movers and shakers like Jerry Jones were so adamant about getting something done there. So, it looks incredible on TV. There's no question about that. Although I couldn't help but notice as I watched the game and the halftime show came on, I was talking about this with my family who I watched it with, the way they set up the stage. I couldn't help but think, but the half the stadium that had the performers, their backs were facing that half of the stadium. I couldn't help but think how upset they might've been. But then again, it's like, okay, you look up and you see these massive video boards. So, which we always talk about, when you go to a big concert, you end up kind of finding yourself watching the screen more than the person themselves, unless you're in the first 10 rows from the stage. But
I showed my wife the video I shot from up on the roof, and the weirdest thing about stadium NFL Super Bowl halftimes on the West Coast in the outdoors is they make it for television, but when you're there, it's in daylight. Mm-hmm. And they have these special lights. I mean, it's very it's the only time in my life I've experienced anything like that. Like, you go into the hockey rinks and they darken it, and what the Ravens are doing now, the blackout and the pitch black and the whites and the lights and the LEDs and all of that stuff, wristbands. I've seen all that at hockey games. I've seen it at football games. It's the only two times in my life. And to some degree, the Miami Super Bowl too, a couple of years ago, even though it was dark out, it was kind of filmed that way. And I think it's a made for television lighting that I have to go Google. My kid will Google it for me and he'll come back. He'll say, "Here, Dad, here's what they're doing out there." But when you sit on the top and you watch Eminem and you watch Dre and you watch Snoop D-O-double-G and you see 50 dropping it, I'm up on the roof. It's daylight out. It's 90 degrees. I haven't seen it on TV yet. So I told my wife, I really just like want to watch all 12 minutes of it, crank the music up and experience it the way millions of people did. Cause I kind of experienced it like a crappy ceiling concert with little guy, even the TVs were not as impressive as maybe you'd want for the halftime show. But other than that, I give the thing an A+, bro.
Yeah. I mean, it was a good Super Bowl. I mean, I absolutely enjoyed the halftime show, and you and I have probably talked. I mean, we've talked about this for over a decade now, talking about halftime shows. And
by the way, it's not the music either one of us listened to in our car. Like,
yeah,
I mean, like, it's not. I have some Eminem on my iPod or whatever, and it pops in here and again. But it's not my music. It was just friggin' great. It was just great.
I'm 38 years old. I listened to that stuff when I was in high school and college, and like many people my age, didn't necessarily continue to listen to hip hop, although I have no problem with it. Just there's not a whole lot in terms of modern hip hop that really appeals to me, because I'm not really the demographic they're looking for. They're selling it to younger people. But it was great. I wouldn't call it the best halftime show ever at the Super Bowl, but it's really high on the list. I mean, it was really well done. And My mom's certainly not someone that fits ever fit the demographic of what some of those, you know, all time great kind of hip hop performers were catering to, but she enjoyed it because she remembered me and, you know, my brother, my sister listening to that at earlier points in our lives. And I think the funniest thing I saw, I can't remember who
you
it was.
Because like Eminem right now. If you drop a knee, let me see what you look like.
I don't know about that, but it was fun. And I think the funniest thing I saw, and I can't remember who, probably, I don't know where it originated, but someone said that if you could follow along and you were singing along to all the words at the halftime show, you might want to check and see if you need to schedule your first colonoscopy. And I thought that was pretty funny just to think like, yeah, these guys are in their 50s now. I mean, you're talking late 90s and, you know, early 2000s still that, I mean, these guys were still at their peak of popularity and they're still very popular.
Things in this century are now nostalgia. That's the first thing we've learned, right?
Oh, no question about
it. When you get 22 years into a century, you're getting there.
Yeah. So it was fun. And oh yeah, we had a pretty good football game to break down and watch. And I think, and I talked about this with Dennis a little bit last week on his show that, you know, we didn't have that Tom Brady legacy kind of thing hanging over the game. Even and that's even kind of shifted to Patrick Mahomes now with what he's done, what the Chiefs have done the last few years.
It felt like a fresh start, and it felt like this defensive
totally was.
Players, Donald and Ramsey, and you know, there were different, just different stars and different people, and you know, the heat on it in LA wasn't much. I mean, the Bengals fans showed up in the end. I don't know where the hell they were all week, but like when the game started, they were 35,000 strong and boisterous and made me root for them. you know, but it was fresh blood all the way around. Every part of it, the stadium, the vibe, like just all felt, you know, new. And for a league that's been doing this a long time, that's probably exactly what they wanted, right?
Yeah, I mean, you obviously want your stars, and I mean, the league's going to look for who's going to be the next Tom Brady. I mean, I heard some of the talking heads even late last week comparing Joe Burrow to Tom Brady. I'm just like, can we just stop with that? And I like Joe Burrow a lot. I guess I'll go back to what Wink said late in the season that, you know, ruffled some feathers, and who knows, may have been part of why the Ravens decided to move on in addition to their struggles. But he said, you know, let's not put the gold jacket on them just yet. And I agree with that. But it is fun when it's fresh. And even the Rams, who had been in the Super Bowl 3 years ago, that was Jared Goff. And Vaughn Miller wasn't there at that point. Odell Beckham wasn't there at that point. Cooper Kupp wasn't the same household name that he's become now, where he's a Super Bowl MVP and, you know, and a guy who offensive player of the year kind of season and all that. So, you know, you had a lot of fresh elements to this. You didn't have that one overwhelming theme, you know, talking about the Brady legacy or the Patriots legacy, as you and I have talked about so many different times at Radio Row at past Super Bowls, but it made it fun. There were a lot of fun stories in isolation, you know, from Matthew Stafford to Eric Weddle. And some veteran guys, and then you know, the Bengals with all their new guys. I mean, look at someone like Andrew Whitworth, who 40 years old, NFL Walter Payton Man of the Year, playing for the Rams. He played most of his career in Cincinnati. So, like, even that was
this, didn't they? I mean, from a league standpoint, like, if you're writing the Ram Reign book right now, really kind of amazing. I mean, it's an incredible story of really screwing St. Louis, showing up, getting a stadium built, trying to build a team after, as Howard Balzer would say, they quit on St. Louis. They were not trying to win, much like the baseball team we're about to go witness. Then they move out there into this circumstance. They get this quarterback in Goff that gets them to a Super Bowl. He's good looking. He's like all of this, but coach doesn't like him. Coach is still 23 years old, barely shaving, right? Coach is 36 years old and want a ring now, right? Been in two Super Bowls and is talking retirement, right? Like, okay, well, you know what? If there's more money in TV and the girls are pretty and you get your, you know, you don't have to show up at work at 4 a.m. every day. I mean, I get that, especially if you got a ring and you're like, I'll take some time off, you know? But I would say this for the Rams story. Locally, there's Funk and Havenstein, right? But I guess globally, there's the Whitworth thing. There's now the Matthew Stafford story, which a star is born there. They've wanted this Hollywood thing. They have black players, white players, old players, young players, offensive players, defensive players. They want the Rams to be the Cowboys to some degree, right? Like this team loaded up, five Hall of Famers on that. I mean, well, Weddle's probably not a Hall of Famer, right? But Hall of Fame got Whitworth's probably going to be considered now. Donald, Von Miller. I mean, they Ramsey's early on, but pretty good players there. And I guess we'll go back and say that when it's all over with. We'll see what the Bengals represent and who Eli Apple is and who this cast of characters and where Chase and these guys will be later on. But from the early part of this, there were veteran players on that Rams team that checks a lot of boxes for me as a champion, just for what you want them to be. Number one overall quarterback, just all sorts of things that they had. Great wide receiver, gets injured in the game and all of that. So Hollywood Rod Tidwell kind of guy to begin with. That's what the league wanted to sell with the NFL Network adjacent to it. And I saw their headquarters and the fountain and like the worldwide, you know, Dr. Evil Lair for Roger Goodell on the West Coast. The Rams have cashed that check and very, very, very quickly. It was 5 minutes ago. I was watching football in St. Louis. Howard Balzer had a team. That's the part that kind of amazed me is how I blink. I don't think the Rams are a generational team there. I don't, as I drove to the airport with Mark Maskey, I was like, nobody here even cares that they won. I mean, it's where the league is and they're just an outpost franchise that it happens to be in LA that I think the league's all over. This is the greatest thing. Roger Goodell is going to be doing cartwheels over all of this because it just was orchestrated.
Well, and I mean, you just said it. I mean, they were hired guns. And I don't say this to be disparaging to the players, but it was a mercenary laden team, right? I mean, you had Matthew Stafford comes over after losing in Detroit for years and not, you know, he was traded. I'm not criticizing the players but because many of these guys were acquired via trade and less need trading draft picks, but they dude, kind
Eric
of
Weddle showed up when I was eating leftover ham soup from Christmas. It's crazy.
Right. But yeah. Oh, no question. I mean, that story in and of itself, I mean, you could make that a movie if you wanted. I mean, I'm not saying it would be an Academy Award, but it would certainly be a fun made for TV movie at the very least, or Netflix or what have you. But yeah, I mean, everything you just laid out with Kroenke and the transition from St. Louis to LA, the fact that the league has you know, hundreds of millions of dollars to be paying to St. Louis and all of that. But, you know, this all had elements of mercenaries and hired guns and something that's kind of artificially done. And even look at LA. I mean, the way this team is built, like I said, it was, you know, kind of thrown together with a bunch of veterans acquired via trades. And hey, it worked. It worked. They went all in. We talked about that. I mean, they famously on the day that, I guess it was the day they acquired Von Miller, and then of course Odell Beckham comes. But they posted the GIF from Teddy KGB from the movie Rounders, where he's got all of his poker chips and he's splashing the pot and saying he's going all in, and that's what they did. And you know, we've talked about that. I mean, when was the last time the Rams had a first round pick? I mean, it's crazy. But I will say, in fairness to them, yes, they showed the aggression and they recognized what they needed to get better. And look, they made it to the Super Bowl 3 years ago. It would have been very easy for them to stick with Jared Goff in that way, in the same way that, you know, I mean, the Ravens with Joe Flacco for years, or the Seahawks with Russell, you know, go down the list. When you have a quarterback that takes you to a Super Bowl, there's an emotional attachment that you're going to have there. But the Rams were very calculated in saying, look, Jared Goff's holding us back, and more specifically, how much he's making for how he's playing. So
you talk about what the Ravens did to Dilfer, right? Like, or you know, whatever you would say about your quarterback not being good enough. You know, I watched Dak Prescott run around radio over last week. I watched Russell Wilson run around. Aaron Rodgers is running around. I'm thinking Pittsburgh doesn't have a quarterback. This is about to become the Wild Wild West the next few weeks. I mean, for where quarterbacks sit, it's not that crazy. It was crazy when Billick said, no thanks to Trent Dilfer. But now that we're 20 years removed from this, you know, I mean, the Ravens may say no thank you to Lamar Jackson before all this is over with. And I don't know that I'd bet a dollar either way right now, but I wouldn't have said that a year ago. And maybe I'm losing my mind and maybe Lamar's here for the next 8 years, but I don't know. I mean, NFL, not for long. Things change quickly.
Yeah. I mean, I still certainly expect that, but you know, we talked about this a couple weeks ago when Eric DaCosta talked. You know, the way in which he spoke and the way in which John Harbaugh spoke about it a year ago compared to now. And part of that is just there's more urgency because the deadline's closer, right? You know, I mean, you're at the point where he's a year closer to free agency. So you're always going to have that. But you're absolutely right. And you know, going back to the Rams.
I mean, right? I mean,
sure.
Good enough, but not that good. You know, Goff, good enough, but not that good. You know,
guys,
meanwhile, Stafford's in Detroit. Nobody pays any attention to him except Greg Cosell, right?
Another name, Carson Wentz. I mean, guys that are good enough that teams want to acquire them, but are they good enough that teams want to marry them and commit to them long term? And I think that's the big difference here. But you know, just to finish up my point on the Rams, though, all these acquisitions of veteran players and trading first round picks, going all in, having a very top heavy roster. I think one thing lost in this, Nestor, and I don't know how much of this is anything they're doing from a brilliant standpoint, from a strength and conditioning sense or anything like that. They've been incredibly healthy the last couple of years, which you're talking about a top heavy roster that's relying on superstars, and you're having some back end of the roster guys that are league minimum, cast offs, late round picks, all of that. You need to stay healthy, and they've been able to. So how much of that is good luck, good fortune in that way? How much of that is maybe they've discovered something with their sports science department and what have you? But I think the undersold element to what they've been able to do, and this is really a credit to their organization, is everyone talks about the first round picks, but go down the list of their roster, and I don't have the roster memorized, but I do know they have lots of later round picks that have developed into really solid contributors for them. And you need that. You know, as much as you talk about your first round picks, and yeah, everyone wants to draft Jonathan Ogden or wants to draft Patrick Mahomes, wants to draft the next Ed Reed, the next Ray Lewis, the next Aaron Donald. You need those guys in the after round one to hit, and they've been able to do that.
Was on Thursday, there were two Ravens that walked through Radio Row. One was Marlon Humphrey, who everybody smelled, and he smells himself. And then there's Matthew Judon that comes through, and we think of them almost in the same light, right? Like Matthew Judon's made a lot of money, been a very good player,
Pro Bowls,
all of that, and they walk through. They are different cuts of meat on draft day. I mean, literally. And that's good on the Ravens. And I guess, good on the Patriots to give him the money or whatever. But the fact that he's thought of in that way, everything you're talking about with Tom Brady and Terrell Davis and those guys being Hall of Famers, that's one thing. How about the Hall of Adelis Thomas or the Hall of Priest Holmes or, having those kind of players hit Ryan Jensen, right? Like those kinds of players that after the fourth round, Mark Andrews, get paid. You get paid and you're a fourth, a fifth, a sixth round player. You know, the organization has done well to have drafted you and put you in a position to win.
Yeah, I mean, everyone wants to talk about the first round, and I'd even put the second and let's say the first half of the third round into that category. You're talking about the top 75, top 80 players in a draft. I mean, and believe me, I'm not even taking that much for granted because we've seen teams like the Cleveland Browns, for example, or go back to the Bengals at various points, who have consistently had top five picks in the first and second and third round, and they've messed those up. So it's not easy, but yeah, I think a key, and that's what's been so critical for the Rams or any of these teams you talk about. I mean, the Patriots, look at the Patriots first round track record, over the last 10 years or so of the Tom Brady era. It wasn't anything to write home about, but you need to be able to identify and find talent day two, day three. And with your UDFAs, your undrafted rookies. So the teams that do that generally are going to be the teams that you're not pointing to that as the biggest key to their success. But if you want to sustain success and you want to win over a number of years and give yourself that proverbial window, whatever that means exactly, you're able to find those guys. So, I mean, that's where you give the Rams a lot of credit. As much as we've talked about the first round picks, and look, I don't know how this is going to go for them the next 3-4 years, because at some point, they're going to have to realize what they're dealing with in terms
remember
of
when that bill came in on Snyder.
Yeah.
After his spree with Bruce Smith
and Deion Sanders. Oh yeah. All those guys.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look at what the Ravens have had to do after both of their Super Bowls. And look, you're fine not having first round picks and not having cap space and happen to make those difficult decisions to bid farewell to veteran players if you get there and you win it. What hurts is if you don't score that touchdown, if Stafford doesn't throw that touchdown to Cooper Kupp, or if the Bengals convert at midfield and go down and either kick the tying field goal and they win in overtime, or throws a bomb to Ja'Marr Chase. That's where it hurts, because you get to that point, and this is where, you know, we could pivot to talking about the Bengals. As much as you always think about your window, or 2 years ago, we talked about this with the Ravens, the optimistic outlook was what? Well, they were a year ahead of schedule. You know, they're still so young. They were a year early. They have plenty of opportunities. And what have we seen since then? Not to say that their window's shut, but we saw that 2019, the stars really aligned for them, and they didn't take advantage. And that's where, if you're the Bengals, and one thing that I credit them here in Zach Taylor and Joe Burrow and their various stars talking after the game and in the aftermath, was understanding that this does hurt, because we're not assured to get back next year, and we've got a lot of work to do, and we need to get better. And certainly the Bengals will identify their offensive line for one, which is no secret. That's been talked about the last couple of years, but you know, it's a funny thing when you talk about the Super Bowl. I mean, two teams that have played well, they've had good fortune to get to that point. And even in this game, I mean, my goodness, this was a close game, a one score game at the very, till the very end. It was exciting. Captivating football, but that difference between the winner and the loser, that's tough, because you get to that point, so much has to go in your favor to get to that point. I mean, look at the Bengals. It's not as though they didn't blow out anyone on the way to their Super Bowl appearance, but you know that it starts over next year. And yeah, you could talk about cap space and Joe Burrow being another year older and Ja'Marr Chase being another year older, and go down the list of guys that they have, you know, things that they have going for them. They have a lot going for them. You know, they'll be the favorite in the AFC North going into next year. They deserve to be. But we also have seen the 49ers are a great example after they lost to the Chiefs the following year, hammered by injuries. I mean, look at the Ravens, what's happened to them these last 2 years since going 14-2. You know that things aren't going to always go perfectly for you. And that's why you get to that point where you're leading with 2 minutes to go and you lose. That's tough to come back from. I think just the physical challenge of it, and just the challenge of navigating a long season ahead for 2022, but just the mental part of that you were that close, but you came up short. And that's where the Rams can look at it and say, okay, yeah, a few years from now, our roster is probably going to be hurting because we don't have first round picks. And at that point, Von Miller is going to be gone, and Matthew Stafford's going to be too old, and Aaron Donald might be retired.
Those fountains out there and all that weed blowing in the air, because they're going to be 5-12 at some point. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, that's going to happen.
It is, but ultimately, what's this game all about? Winning Super Bowls. So when you get there, and this was always the thing that kind of made me not laugh, but just made me shake my head when I'd hear people say, "Oh, the Ravens shouldn't have paid Joe Flacco." It's like, He had an all-time postseason performance in 2012 and won you a Super Bowl.
By the way, one that they've forgotten about, and I have to put that in.
I mean, just silliness. I don't even know what to say about that. But I think, you know, we forget that as much as you're always looking to the next thing, you know, you win that Super Bowl, that gives you that grace period. And maybe it's not as long as it used to be. I mean, ask Doug Peterson, who's getting ready to coach the Jaguars, just 4 years removed from winning a Super Bowl in Philly.
It's going to last about a week and a half, or until like the Dodgers or the Lakers show up.
Oh, sure. Well, and that's what's also interesting. I think with LA, it's almost like the Rams were the perfect fit for what Los Angeles is. I mean, maybe there's a little more authenticity when it comes to the Dodgers, maybe. But I don't know. I mean, you look at the Lakers. I mean, LeBron comes in after, you know, two stints in Cleveland and winning titles in Miami, comes to LA and they win a title, and then you kind of see what's happened there. And, you know, you go down the list. I mean, it feels like the hired guns are appropriate for that market, which, and maybe we're wrong.
Always
maybe,
has been. It's where Joe Namath went at the end. It's where Burke Jones went, right? Like, yeah, literally.
I mean, right. I mean, it just comes down to, I mean, it feels like for me, and maybe it's inaccurate, because Showtime in LA in the 80s was very much beloved, but I don't know. The Dodgers feel like the only thing there that people will pay attention to for more than 5 minutes. And even that's still a little more fleeting than you would think, considering their tradition. But yeah, the Rams win and it's great, and there's a party in LA, but to your point, go to the airport the next day and life is back to normal.
I flew
onto the next thing.
Not one Ram hat, not one Bengal hat on my plane.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and I've never done that. And that's Southern California. Luke is here. We're going to get back into it. I want to remind everybody about Royal Farms and the mocha coffee going on there. I was not privy to that last week. I had for coffee most of the week out in California, but it is good to be back home. I have not cut my hair yet, although I am considering it. We're going to get the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road beginning March 4th. I'm working my butt off. Luke, I got a short month, man. I mean, what is this? You get back Valentine's Day from the Super Bowl. I want to just move the thing into March Madness and have it happen at that point, but winter is getting sucked up. We're certainly going to be talking some Ravens football here and getting it back on the road, but I am back in. Lots of wise conversations ahead, including with Luke. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, back from Radio Row and Super Bowl coverage, although you will hear some of that here. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore. Positive.